All right, let's open the clinic. We'll do some clap revision. The number's 877-710-ESPN.
Clap revision.
Walking the streets of New York this whole week with my daughter. It was just so great. I'm not embarrassed to say this, but I ate pizza. Not only every single day for 5 days straight. I'm a pizzologist. My wife, God bless her. It's breakfast, Robbie. You can't have pizza now. Why not? I would walk in and I'd look at the pizza. Yes, can I help you? No, I'm sorry. Yours just does not look good enough. And then I found one. I think it's 105th Street and Broadway. Looks like a brand new pizza place. I walk in. Fresh pizza just came right out of the oven. They had Sicilian slices, but there it was, this giant triangle. They called it the grandmother's. I have no idea why. It's only three ingredients. It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. It's the offense, the defense, and special teams. You know, the oven is the Colosseum. Four things. There's three ingredients, but four things, right? But what you do with those three things, morning, afternoon, evening. Come on, it's all threes. It's all a trifecta. But what you do with those three things and how you get them to become one. Pizza is a metaphor for life. And I know there's a good one in Arizona. And I know they're in New Haven, Sally's and Pepe's. And they struggle like crazy here in Los Angeles to make good pizza. But when you walk the streets of New York and every corner, there's CVS pharmacies at every corner. Good. You can have all those damn drugs. I don't need a drug. I'm having pizza every single day. Every meal. God, I'd walk into my daughter's apartment with another box. She's going, where am I going to put all of these? And then in college, God, I had the most favorite pizza place, 110th Street in Amsterdam Avenue, right across the street from St. John the Divine, the largest Gothic cathedral in the world. They're still building it, by the way. It's, you know, been around for like 200 years. It's still not finished. But right across the street is V&T's Pizza, and they had a pizza there called, well, not called, they put eggplant on it. I don't even like eggplant. But you put that eggplant on that pizza. Oh, my God. And right next door is the Hungarian pastry shop. I don't even know what Hungary is. I know what a pastry is. This thing's been there forever. You talk about ending up with a heart attack. I go in there. I've been eating there since 1975. That's where right next to Columbia. They make the best croissant in the world. Okay, so what's a croissant? It's just layers of dough and butter and layers and dough. And they coil it all up. And they put it in the oven. It's just flaky. It's amazing, but it's butter and dough. When I get this with this really, really strong coffee, I put butter on it. I think you should be arrested if you put butter on top of a croissant. I put butter on it because it's warm and it melts. And apricot jelly. Now, there's all kinds of jellies. There's strawberry. There's grape. There's raspberry. Treat yourself today. Find a croissant, even a bad one. Heat it up a little bit. Put some butter on it. And apricot jelly. This is an experience that you will need a cup of coffee and a cigarette when you're done. You're going to the moon, Alice. Yeah, you got to live in the moment. You want to have a great moment today? Have a croissant. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. With butter and apricot jam. Oh, my God. Speaking of incredible things, yesterday I went surfing. I had the day off. And after I'm done surfing, I went looking in Ventura for my favorite ice cream shop, McConnell's. So I walk in. By the way, I parked the car. They banged on the door. We're not open yet. I said, okay, what time do you open? Who's the first one at the ice cream shop? Me, of course. And after you go surfing, I can like eat a house. 3 hours of paddling with my friend Ed in the water was fantastic. By the way, other hosts probably look and go, God, the guest didn't call in. What are we going to do now? This is not a problem for me. I guess you could say I have a gift, but I love talking about food. So I bang on the door. I'm ready. Okay, we're not open yet. I think they open at 11 o'clock. They open the door, or noon. They opened at noon. That was it. They opened the door. It's an ice cream shop. Why would they be open at noon even? I said, first, do you have churro con leche ice cream? Of course we do. We're McConnell's. I don't know what the... I think these cows, instead of eating grass, are actually eating churros. So the milk already has the cinnamon in the milk. Because it's the most delicious ice cream. This is the flavor. And you can't really get it in the supermarket, but you can get it at the shop. Churro con leche. So I had to start with that. I almost had two cones. Good thing my wife wasn't there. She would have killed me. I said, so what's new? She said, we have a flavor, which I tried later. I'm guilty. So you know what? I forgot what holiday it is, but you get not just strawberries, but they dip them in chocolate. The geniuses at McConnell's ice cream. You know what they did? They took these chocolate-covered strawberries, chopped them up, and put them in the ice cream and made an ice cream flavor called chocolate-covered strawberry ice cream. Oh!
Perfect.
And you know when it's good ice cream, when as soon as they are done scooping it and putting on the cone, it starts to melt. This is how you know it's got butterfat in it, which is what makes it taste so good. Wow, I'm exhausted. I mean, forget about paying the bills. I think I need a break. I need to just calm down now. And I also need to teach you some what I learned in New York in the operating room. Leave it to my friend Steve Haas, who's such a genius knee surgeon. I just love him. Every time I go, I spend time with him. I always learn something new. And he's really come up with another project. And what does it remind me of? Visiting McDonald's. Why would that make any sense? But when you go to a McDonald's, you talk about logistics and using the computer right. When you order the Happy Meal and the French fries, the computer that sends the information to the guys and ladies in the back that there's a hamburger that needs to come because you've just ordered one, their logistics, their computer system is so sophisticated that it tells the warehouse, which could be 5 miles away, that you need another burger patty because you just used one for this customer. So they keep connected. In medicine, we don't do that. We don't keep track instantaneously with the particular implant. So if you're Will Chamberlain, which I took care of, the prosthesis you're going to use for him, he's 7'1", is different than a prosthesis you're going to use on Willie Shoemaker, the jockey. One is 7 feet, the other is 5 feet. But the way logistics are done in medicine, in the hospital, is awful. We don't track which size that we used so that we know how to store things, so that we just store gigantic amount of equipment, which is so wasteful. We could learn from McDonald's. And people like my buddy Steve Haas is telling me how he has interconnected the computer for the hospital to keep track of the implants that are used. It's just, this is the problem. We don't talk to each other. The biology department fights with the chemistry department. The math department fights with the computer science department. Here, the radio station, God forbid we should ever be visited by the television people, you know? Exactly. Thank God for George Briones. But he's behind the scenes. I'm talking about, you want to solve the problems? Start talking to each other. Because the answer is, this guy's smart enough. He figured it out. This is the genius of David Stern, by the way. Because when he took over the NBA, these games were not on national television and showcased. If you were lucky, you got to see the championships after the 11 o'clock news. But David Stern was like my friend Steve Haas. David Stern went to the arena that was selling more food than everybody else. When he went to the other stadium, they didn't sell any food. So you know what he said? We need to use the same food that the guys who are winning. He just got the different franchises to learn from each other. And this is how he slowly built the NBA. Then the fact, of course, that Magic and Bird came along, you know, certainly helped it. But I think you make your own luck. Gary Player, the golfer, used to say, why is it that the more I practice, the luckier I get? You know, you can't say, well, David Stern was lucky that Magic and Bird came. There were plenty of good players beforehand. Jerry West was there. Elgin Baylor was there. Bill Russell was there. How could you still be after the 11 o'clock news when you got a chance to watch Bill Russell against Wilt Chamberlain? So the talent was always there. It's just you had to, as Dr. Ranawat says, the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. You need someone who's looking to make it successful. And this is the tragedy of Jim Morrison never speaking to his father again. His father not only told him, son, you can't sing. Can you imagine telling Jim Morrison? Now, I could tell him that, but I'm not his father. When your father says you can't sing and you want to be a singer, you never, that hole, that black hole in your heart can never be filled by anybody else. This is what you learn in psychiatry. This is why you lie on the couch. All right, coming up next, we'll do some calls. The clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I already know if I can talk my next guest into being with me for two segments, I will. This is like talking to Isaiah Thomas, Dick Butkus. For me and what happened in my life, this man saved me. Joining me right now is the great Sean Thompson. Sean Thompson, thank you so much for making time.
My pleasure. It's great to chat.
I got to tell you, you know, the impact that you had on so many people. We already, I don't know if you know this, if you've been listening, we had a caller talking about a moment he's at Sunset, lost his board, got caught inside, and you saved his life. You probably don't even remember this, but he's out there lost, and you let him stay on your board for a few minutes so he got his breath, and it told him how to swim against the riptide. And I told him, physically, you touched him and you saved his life at Sunset in 1983. But for me, you've touched so many people in so many ways that you don't even realize. But you're a Jewish surfer. Yes, I had Sandy Koufax. He was a great baseball player, and finding out that he was Jewish. Right. We loved him even more. But for me, I'm trying to make something of myself from a real poor upbringing in Queens. And I somehow get pushed. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to go to Columbia. I really don't belong there. How am I going to do? All these guys going to these prep schools and what? There's such advantages. I can't do it. I can't stay up all night. And I'm trudging through the sidewalks in Manhattan with the slush and the whole bit. And I see you on the cover of Surfing Magazine winning the world champion. I'm going, oh, my God, who is this guy? And then I learn it's you. And you were proud to be Jewish. You mentioned it even. I'm going, I'm going to keep doing it. You inspired me in a whole different kind of way. And it's just a real joy to have you all these years later for you to still surf. One day we'll go to C Street together and I'll get to at least sit next to you. It will be fantastic. The reason there's so many things I would like to ask you about, but one of them is the true icon for all of us. The world we now live in is Steve Jobs. And when you read the biography of Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson, you learn about this genius in that he went to Xerox. He starts this little company, Apple, goes to Xerox, and actually mishears. He doesn't hear. He thinks they've told him that on a tablet, you can pretend to turn a page, that you can stack papers on a desk, that you can stack layers. The people at Xerox says, we don't have that technology. You didn't see that here. But he goes back to his engineers and says, oh, my God, I just saw that Xerox is doing that. And in this crazy way, they actually make the impossible happen because he missaw it. When you had your shaper, Spider Murphy, you write this in your book, which is an amazing book, Busting Down the Door. On page 25, you say, I'd shown Spider photos I had taken of a sunset gun that had been shaped by the legendary Dick Brewer for Jeff Hackman. The board had a gentle rocker just forward of center. And you describe it. And in fact, the photograph, he tries to make it, and he makes a board that has nothing like what they actually had. He errs. in making it. But you took that board, and like Steve Jobs changed our world, you changed the world of surfing because you could maneuver on this wave like no one else. What an amazing moment. Tell us what that was like to have that pink banana board of yours and how different it was.
Well, I think you never know where innovation is going to come from, and I think you can only find out what the limits are when you push towards those limits. And certainly for me as a surfer, surfing the Banzai Pipeline and trying to come to terms with the fear associated with that wave was always for me a barrier that I had to cross. I think for any young surfer, male or female, the Banzai Pipeline's the benchmark. That's sort of our Mount Everest. And as a young boy, I knew that one day I'd have to paddle over that edge, and I needed the right equipment to help me along the path. And I'd ordered a board, like you said, from my shape in South Africa Spider, and it turned into a complete debacle, as I thought. The board turned into, it looked like a banana. But it was the only board I had, and Pipeline came up, and I went out there with it, and I thought, well, I'm going to have a go because it's all I've got. And as it turned out, the board in many ways changed the direction that surfing went in, because the board had it enabled me to take off later and maneuver inside the tube and just do things differently, and it was very unexpected, and I think a lot of innovation happens that way. It's it's unexpected, but if you don't take action and if you don't... for me, it was all about paddling over that edge. And at Pipeline, the risk was real. I mean, if you paddled over the edge and you had a bad wipeout, sure, there was a possibility that you could die. I mean, the danger was real. The danger was there. But I remember as a young boy, I went for it, and it sort of just changed the trajectory of my career. And I think there's kind of a lesson there for anyone that's into innovation or into entrepreneurship or just wants to make a difference is just take what you got and go for it, because you never know what can happen.
Exactly.
I mean, certainly that's what happened with me.
Exactly. And I keep, for me, the worlds that I'm passionate about, surgery, medicine, the world of art, I sculpt in marble. I go to Italy every year and use the stone from Michelangelo's quarry. For me, art is a passion. Yes. Someday I'll have to show you. So the world of medicine, the world of art, and the world of sports, the worlds that I just love, I believe there's a commonality. So with all due respect, you've mastered the waves of the ocean, water waves. Well, Brian Wilson, he had the Beatles. Rubber Soul was what he was constantly trying to emulate. Those are sound waves. The way he conquered them, he even outdid the Beatles and Rubber Soul, is to some extent when I see and read about you going beyond. You win in 1975 the Pipeline Masters. You actually beat the Hawaiian surfers that inspired you. Brian Wilson wrote songs with greater harmonies and melodies than some of the Beatles songs. What was that like in 1975 for you to be able to travel from South Africa, see your heroes, compete against them, and win?
Well, it was so long ago, but to be compared to George Martin and Ron Wilson, that's pretty awesome.
Yes, no one else will call you this, but I am.
But certainly, I think that collaborative aspect and the competitive aspect in sport is what makes sport continually evolving. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I beat my heroes, and my heroes have beat their heroes before them, and it's just a sort of continuing aspect of competition and that desire to be better than you can be. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like in my mind I wanted to be better than everyone else. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be the best I could be and to be better than I could be. Even today when I go out there and surf, I still love surfing. I'm incredibly passionate about it, and every wave I take off on, I just try to surf it to the limit of my ability. It gives me that sort of constant in my life. It's always that constant pushing and trying to break one's own barrier. And back then, so many years ago, when I was just sort of a teenager from South Africa coming over to the North Shore with a sort of ambition to ride these big waves, ride the Banzai Pipeline and surf with my heroes like Jeff Hackman and Jerry Lopez, Rory Russell, Rina Avalero, all these amazing guys. It was, it wasn't like you wanted to go over there and destroy everyone. You wanted to just go over there and surf as good as you could and get the inspiration from these guys. And that's what I did. And I think that young guys today have also drawn their inspiration from their particular heroes. I know that the guys that came after me, guys like Gary Elkerton and Martin Potter and Tom Carroll, you know, all inspired by what Rabbit Bartholomew and Mark Richards and I did. And it's just, there is that sort of evolution of sport in which you take the best from the best and you use it yourself to be the best. I mean, that's sort of been my basic philosophy.
You know, there's no better metaphor for life. People say golf is a metaphor for life, that a 300-yard drive is worth the same as a 2-inch putt. How unfair that is. The scorecard doesn't care. But to me, surfing is the greatest metaphor for life because the nose of the board is your future, the tail of your board is the past, and the surfer stands in the middle. You live in the moment. So the metaphor, the metaphors are all around us.
It's a potent metaphor. I mean, I was just in South Africa over the last few weeks speaking to about 30,000 students across the country in the poorest schools and the most affluent schools. And many of the schools that I went to, I talked to young students about the power of choice and the power of will in determining your future. And many of the schools I went to, the students had never even seen the ocean. But the surfing metaphor that I used was so resoundingly impactful. And these young kids just got it, you know, and it was amazing. See, I didn't know whether they would, you know, whether they would connect with the surfing metaphor and, you know, the notion of balance and the notion of always paddling back out and taking the drop with commitment. These simple metaphors that I used in a couple of my books, but it is so powerful and it's so overreaching that it cuts through any lack of knowledge, because you know you were talking about this concept of waves and you were talking about sound waves which are unseen, they're just heard. I like to think that when you talk about surfing, that metaphor moves in a spirit way because it really connects with young people, and also I work with big businesses as well. It connects with them at a spiritual level, and Hawaiians call it, which is so interesting. I spoke at this amazing school called Kamehameha School, which is the repository of Hawaiian heritage and culture in Hawaii. And the dean said to me, Sean, you know, when you talk in these surfing metaphors, you're talking in spirit language. And I thought it was such a cool concept, you know, when you can speak in this language or metaphor that people understand at a deep emotional level, at a spirit level.
You're a healer. In many respects, when you do that, you're like a doctor. All right, Sean, can you stay for another segment?
Sure.
My dreams came true. I love this. Okay. All right. We're going to have Sean Thompson hang on the line. We'll pay some bills, and we're going to come back because I want to talk to him about my favorite subject, which is my father. I want to talk to him about his father and the 1975 Pipeline Masters. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm what's known as kvelling right now. It's a Yiddish term, like I'm purring like a cat, because I'm talking to one of my heroes, the great Sean Thompson. Sean, thanks so much for staying on the line. Not only...
It's a pleasure,
it's just so nice to talk to you. And one of the great moments in my life, and I've been blessed like you to have many, was not only did I go to school, became a surgeon, but because of bringing art, you bring art to your world of surfing. You're not just a surfer, you're an artist. You're like Kobe Bryant, seeing the basketball court like an empty canvas, and he paints a new painting like Picasso, he would say, each time he plays. For me in surgery, the three-dimensional nature of doing a knee replacement, hip replacement, to make them perfect is just like Michelangelo sculpting. The art that you bring to whatever you do. So it culminated in becoming an inventor. I've designed a lot of tools that are used in South Africa. They're used all over the world. And I have patents on these tools. And I got to bring, in the late 80s, early 90s, my father to the orthopedic convention because my tools were now being launched. And every surgeon who does hip and knee replacement, shoulder replacements, wanted to use these tools I invented. And bringing my father, the carpenter, to this meeting, and I remember he looked at me and he said, "How did you come up with this?" It was like the greatest moment in my life. So on page 29 in your book, you write, in 1975, I won the Masters in solid 10-foot surf at Pipeline, beating out all the goofy footers, which are guys standing on the board completely opposite to you, and proving the validity of my aggressive new approach and unorthodox equipment. My dad had flown over a week before, and winning the event with him on the beach, savoring the moment with him, still stands as the highlight of my competitive career. Sean Thompson, take us back to that moment, having your dad on the beach when you made your dream come true.
Oh, it was an amazing moment, I think, for a number of reasons. One was that in his youth, my dad was one of South Africa's top competitive swimmers. His dream was to win a gold medal at the Olympics, and then the Second World War intervened, and he volunteered. He was an air gunner in the South African Air Force, a tail gunner. And then he came back and resumed his swimming career again. And in 1946, he was training for the 48 Olympics. He was hit by Zambezi shark, which nearly killed him and nearly bit his arm off. So it sort of destroyed his dream. He was never going to be an Olympic swimming champion. But he never lost his love for the ocean. He taught me how to swim and surf 100 yards away from where he'd been attacked. So for him to be this big supporter of my career and have this great love for the ocean and to sort of not have had his dream come true and then come to Hawaii and then to be on the beach and see my dream come true, it was, in some ways, it was like he was fulfilling his dream as well, but just in a different way. So it was wonderful to share that moment with him, to be on the beach with him and to have that, that connectivity with your dad. And it's like... Yes, I won for myself, but I also won for my dad, and it was so fun just to share to share that moment with him. And then I made a movie a number of years back with a great guy, Jeremy Gosch, and we were looking through some old footage, and we came across some old footage. ABC had filmed the event, ABC Wide World of Sports.
Wow.
And when they were announcing the results, my father passed away in 1981, when they were announcing the results, and they went in first place, Sean Thompson, and I hear in the background, "You beauty!" My father must have been standing near the table, going, "You beauty!" And it was like his voice speaking to me.
Years.
It was just a wonderful sort of surreal moment.
You know, one of the
I relived it again.
That's fantastic. You know, because you come from South Africa, but made the pilgrimage that you must to Hawaii. I'm coming from the streets of New York, made the pilgrimage to Hawaii. There's something that captures us that if ever we needed this in the world today, we need it now, but we've always needed it. And it's hard to describe, but I get it and you get it. And I would love the listeners to understand the Sean Thompson interpretation of it. And that is the spirit of aloha. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think aloha, it's such an amazing concept. To me, it's this concept of sharing, and which I think is at the core of the Hawaiian culture, and in many ways, the core of the surfing culture, and it's at the core of what I do with my life right now. I go around and just share my spirit with some of the biggest organizations in the world and at schools and universities. So I just love to live in that world, you know, this world of sharing, this world of giving. And, you know, Hawaii, during my career, gave me so much. It was this iconic place. It was this, like you say, it was this voyage that I had to make in order to realize my destiny. And when I got there, I realized that it was everything that it was spoken about and written about. It was pure. It had this sort of purity there. And I learned about the spirit of aloha, certainly from people like Eddie Aikau and, you know, these wonderful Hawaiian surfers like Rina Abalera, these just incredible sharing, giving, honorable people of great integrity. It's interesting, in KwaZulu-Natal, which is where I was born, in Durban, there's a Zulu word, which is Ubuntu, which means something very similar. It's like this brotherhood, this camaraderie, this spirit of sharing and of being connected. Mm. And in the last chapter of my latest book, The Code, I write about this concept of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about sharing stories, and I tell the story about the sacred story stone and the sacred story circle that my son created in the sand on my adopted home beach at Hammonds up in Santa Barbara, and how when you sit in this circle and you just connect with one another at sort of a deeply spiritual and emotional level, amazing things can happen. And Aloha is at the core of it, that concept of sharing spirit.
You know, the sport that you've chosen, surfing, is all about water, which is wet, and it's all about movement. And yet, the challenge for the photographer is the paper is dry, and it's an instantaneous shot. So to be able to convey, in the early days, I didn't get to watch surfing movies, but to be able to walk down that slushy, miserable street as a freshman in college, feeling like they're going to throw me out of school and I'm never going to become a doctor, and seeing you riding pipeline is what saved me, like I told you when we first started talking. I'd love you to speak to about your favorite photographer, the guy who mastered this paradox of showing a sport that's wet and moving, but he was able to convey the spirit of surfing better than anybody else. What did he do? What is the magic of Dan Merkel?
So for me, you know, I've worked with sort of many photographers over the years, and the photographers were already there. It wasn't like they were part of the action. I think, you know, the modern evolution is the photographer certainly a part of the action, and a lot of the script and the shooting is choreographed with us. They were there like just to capture the action. So I think it was important when this guy Dan Merkel, amazing photographer, used to work with us, we'd be driving through, you know, a 10-foot tube at the place at like Banzai Pipeline or off the wall or backdoor pipeline. And he would have this big Second World War Millikan high-speed camera that weighed about 40 pounds, but he'd be absolutely still. And I think that that stillness was, and that extreme concentration and was what enabled him to get the shots. Because for me, when you're driving through the tube, there was this perception that time has expanded, you know, that time was slowed down, that in some ways you could actually curve that wall to your wall, you could actually control that wave. And then when Dan was there, right, almost with you, but not moving, just being absolutely still, solitary, calm, and relaxed, it was like you had absolute confidence that he wasn't going to get in the way. He wasn't going to spoil the wave in any way. He was just sort of like he was part of it all. And there was this sort of connectivity between you, the wave, and him that was really, that was very, very rare. So I think he had this very deep awareness and deep, deep, deep self-awareness in relation to this sort of collapsing environment and this fluid environment, because he could have at any moment been thrown over the falls and landed right, you know, right on me, but he just had this sort of presence. I think it was very, he was very gifted.
Sean, my artistic hero is Michelangelo. I can't talk to him because it's 500 years ago, but I feel like I got to talk to my hero in sports this morning, the Michelangelo of surfing, you.
Thank you, really.
And I want to thank you so much for making time for us and for everybody to really hear you and feel you through the radio waves, just like I get to watch you on YouTube of the old days of surfing pipeline like nobody else. You're an amazing person, and thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Great, and thanks for inspiring so many people, man. Take care. All right.
God bless. All right, the great Sean Thompson. I think I need some kind of blood pressure medication right now, because I can't even sit still. Wow, I got to recover from that. Coming up next, I had the best pancakes in Los Angeles this week, and I'm about to tell you where. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710. I eat pancakes all over the world. Belgium waffles in Belgium, okay? From New York, I eat pancakes at every possible place. But I'm here to tell you, I'm a pancologist. That's a pancake-ologist. A pancologist. The best pancakes, hands down, in the world, are here in Los Angeles. And they are at the Farmer's Market at Dupars. No valet parking. You're going back in time. It's wooden walls. Photos of LA from the past. You sit down, the plate is a million years old. It is the greatest. Went there this week. So I'm revealing I had pancakes this week. I went to the Apple Pan. You wonder why I'm snoring and I have sleep apnea now, because I'm so fat. But you know what? I'm not stopping. And I don't take any pills either. That's a whole other thing. I'm going to take a quick call, and then I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Michael, you're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Oh, Dr. Clapper, I've turned so many people on to you after having my hip replacement just because you helped me so much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. Tell me about Sean Thompson.
Yeah, I wish I could have talked to him because he probably would have remembered me, but I worked on a lot of his boards and about six or seven other pros, you know, when they needed the boards done really fast.
Wow.
And when I met him, they were locked out of their car outside of my house at Rocky Point, and that was in the old days when you could use a hanger and open the door, and I couldn't wait. I said, let me have a try, and I opened the door, and I think his dad had like half an arm back in the day.
Yeah.
And I named my son after him only because, and I don't idolize nobody, but he was so polite in and out of the water, and in Hawaii, it's so crowded and so cutthroat. Mm-hmm. I never seen him, even when he traveled to this coast and surfed here. I never seen him in the most crowded conditions get in an argument, cuss at anybody. He's such a gentleman.
Why? And that's why I asked him. Tell us what the spirit of aloha means. He lives it. He don't just talk about it. He is a walking example of the spirit of aloha. And you can feel it when you watch that smile on his face as he's riding the wave like it's a part of his body. It's a part of him. That's why he can never fall off the wave, because it's a part of him. To be able to have him as my guest today is over the top. And I hope the Weekend Warrior Nation can appreciate. You may not surf, but what you want to do in your life is to be able to do something good enough that you get to meet someone like this, and you all got to meet him together with me for the first time. It's the first time I ever got to talk to him. It was a really special moment, and I want to thank you for tuning in with us. I appreciate it. Thanks for turning everybody onto the show. I very much appreciate your spirit of aloha. Let's go to Janet, wherever you're calling from. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning. How are you?
Very good, Janet. Jean Crawford says every female listener is unique to the Weekend Warrior Show because they ain't listening during the week. They're just listening to this show. So thank you for being a loyal listener.
Thank you for your help.
My pleasure. Tell me how I can help you. I only have a few minutes.
Okay. My daughter-in-law, Laura, had a tumor on her upper jaw, mm-hmm. and she went in and had surgery, and they took the tumor out. It was benign. And so they put a bone graft in the upper jaw, and that bone graft did not take, and mm-hmm. that's been a year. And so we were wondering, instead of going back in and having surgery again for another bone graft that might not take, is there any other procedure that she could go through to not make two surgeries in a row? Because I guess they're going to put a steel plate in with it and then take the steel plate out afterwards.
So
surgery.
I am a medical doctor, which means I went to medical school. And okay. then I became a surgeon. People can, and for the first 2 years of medical school, you share the same clinical classes with dentists who are going to dental school, who also are doctors, doctor of dental medicine and dental surgery. The MDs love to not want to talk to dentists as if there's some kind of like podiatrist and everybody's fighting amongst themselves. This is like human nature. You got to fight with everybody. But if an MD really told the truth, we owe, particularly in orthopedic surgery, we owe so much to the dentist because it's from dentistry. My patents in ultrasonic tools came from going to the dentist. You've heard that story. But the glue, the acrylic cements we use, we didn't dream it up, came from the dentist. When I do hip replacements and shoulder replacements, I use titanium. Instead of glue to hold it in place now, bone grows into it. This is an uncemented prosthesis. It's a revolutionary idea. Guess where it came from? The dentist. Because when they do those implants into your jaw, they're the ones that came up with the idea of having the bone grow into the implant. So in a roundabout way, my wife always says, I never answer the question, so I'm going to answer the question now. In a roundabout way, you're right, Janet. The answer may be that you can use a certain kind of, it's called tantalum. Essentially, you're a surfer. So you know what a boogie board is. It's a high-density foam. Some genius, I actually met this guy once. I forgot his name. He's a chemist. He took a boogie board, high-density foam, into a machine and changed the pore size, the density foam. He made it from being plastic into metal. It's called tantalum. Why did he do this? Because this boogie board of metal with all these holes, these porous holes, it looks like high-density foam, perfectly mimics bone marrow. It looks like metal bone marrow. And in patients as an orthopedic surgeon that I have to operate on who don't have bone for me to work with, I can use tantalum, which is metal, and I can cut it and shape it, and it essentially allows me in the operating room to sculpt the defect and put that into the jaw. I'm not a jaw surgeon, but into your hip or your knee or your shoulder, and rebuild your bone with this tantalum, and the bone that surrounds it will now grow into that material. So, don't give up. You need to find someone who's doing this kind of work. It may mean you have to go to UCLA or USC, some university type place, but it's important for you to get another opinion, and don't give up. You've already had one procedure, it failed. This is a perfect time to get a second opinion of rebuilding the bone, maybe by using something other than bone, which clearly is failing. No point in doing it again. You want to see if there's another solution to it. Does that help?
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Are you going to surf right now? Where are you going to surf?
C Street.
Get out of here.
Ventura.
I'll be there tomorrow morning. See you at 8 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Janet, God bless you. All right, Warriors. I got about a minute left. Time to talk about food. Being Jewish, Friday night, you have this yellow bread called challah. There's nothing better than having this challah bread the next morning. I have it with bacon, which right away throws the whole Jewish thing out the window. But I have it dipped in egg with butter and Vermont maple syrup. It's the best thing to have with French toast, to make challah French toast, until this week, Jared Abrams. This week, I discovered something that's even better than challah French toast. You know what it is? King's, the Hawaiian bread. We had a barbecue. We had hamburgers. Instead of getting the white bread bun, my wife got King's Bakery Hawaiian sweet bread for the bun, which, by the way, makes cheeseburgers taste off the charts. But we didn't use them all. So I had a bag of these extra King's Hawaiian bread buns. I get up in the morning and the bag starts talking to me. Hey, Robbie, come here. Maybe if you use me for French toast in the morning before you go to surgery today, you'll have so much energy. I ripped open that bag, dipped it in the egg, and I made French toast with King Hawaiian bread. What do you do with a hamburger bun when you don't have a hamburger anymore? Here's the answer. Make French toast. But it's got to be this stuff. I poured a lot of cinnamon on it. You got to have cinnamon with the French toast as well.
Vanilla extract, obviously, right?
I didn't try that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another one. Oh, my God. Hi, caramba. It's fantastic. Where else are you going to hear this but on the Weekend Warriors Show on ESPN LA 710?